Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A made no rains on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A made no rains on the track when we unite.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And JD is out this week, so I'm with my cousin. He is fed-pilled. He is Joe Gilbert. How you doing, Joe?
Doing pretty good, man. Good luck to JD tonight, state championship. Really big deal.
Yeah. He's traveling with his wrestling team. I hope they all kick ass, and I hope his son gets a chance to whoop a couple asses, too. But he's probably in a hotel room right now with a bunch of stinky teenage boys after wrestling meet, so... I'm sure he'd much rather be here with us, but he actually, yeah. So everybody's like, why is JD off this week? I'm like, dude, JD has like three jobs. He's getting his master's degree. And this podcast pays him like no money. So, yeah. so naturally he doesn't mind. He has to take off every once in a while.
You know, honestly, you asked me to do it, but early this morning I just naturally assumed that he watched something on Dynamite that finally broke his brain. He's like, no, I just got to take the week off. But, you know, state championships, much better reason. I hope everything is going great for him this weekend.
Yeah, me too. And speaking of which, I'm going to bring this up right now. So last week, we actually released a movie that JD wrote and produced. It's a documentary film called Independence, Wrestling with the Community. And we got a whole synopsis here that we put together. So basically, it's about a wrestling program in Independence, Iowa, and a pretty successful program, but they were not getting any community support. So they called JD up, asked him if he can come and do a movie about it. And sure enough, he went over there. He actually got a really good documentary out about it and followed them all the way in their quest to go capture a state title. And in hopes that the community would actually rally around them and they would get funding and things like that. So everybody, if you could do me a favor, this is up on the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel. If you could give me a big thumbs up right there, throw a thumbs up. And then if you could just put a couple comments in here, as you can see, it's only me and JD commenting on it right now to each other. So here's why that's important. So our YouTube channel is essentially like a place just for wrestling fans to kind of like kick it and watch some stuff. Me and JD tell a lot of jokes and we don't break news, but we talk about breaking news and all that stuff. It's not really a YouTube channel designed to like have a full length feature film on it. So it's going under the radar right now, but if people will like the video and comment on the video, it will eventually hit the algorithm and that'll send a signal to like documentary movie fans that, hey, look, this YouTube channel these guys got, they're actually putting movies on it. So maybe we can go there and check that out. And then if it gets to be successful, I think JD has a couple more of these in the can and we'll start being able to put like full length feature films onto our YouTube channel. That would really help us out. So if you could do me that favor, I'd greatly appreciate it.
You know, I'm looking forward to watching this probably tomorrow, actually, because I've got nothing going on. And I do really want JD to get the encouragement to follow more of that side of wrestling, too. I shot him an idea a few weeks ago about the idea of, Olympic wrestling, Olympic style wrestling, and how it's impacted pro wrestling. Knowing his knowledge from both sides of the wrestling spectrum, we need to bring that out of him. He's got so much, man, and I'm just looking forward to it being brought to the surface, and this is going to be a great place to start.
Yeah, so we premiered it on the YouTube channel on Tuesday night. I actually ended up watching it after Dynamite on Wednesday night. I sat down and I watched the whole movie, and I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. Got a lot of cool characters. The head wrestling coach there is kind of a nutty dude. He kind of reminds me of my wrestling coach from when I was in high school. So I really got a kick out of it. So everybody go check it out. Independence Wrestling with a Community. Support JD's project. So we would greatly appreciate it. But Joe, you have not been on in a while, man. I'm really looking forward to having you. Whenever JD said he couldn't make it, I was like, fuck, you know, I'm going to get my cousin Joe to come on because A, he offers a different perspective, but B, I don't really get a chance to talk to my cousin all that often. So it's just kind of cool to have you on the show.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Was really looking forward to it. As soon as you asked all day, I've just been kind of sitting and stirring and thinking about more AEW wrestling than I have in months, probably all day today. As soon as you asked me to be on the show.
Yeah. Well, we have some AEW topics, but right now I think this week, well, the top two topics are WWE related. Yeah. Now, WWE and TKO, they really want us to forget about the fact that they're currently undergoing a sex trafficking investigation and that the federal government is actually investigating Vince McMahon. There's this big lawsuit that's out there by Janelle Grant and her lawyer. Well, there's been a snowball effect, and this Ashley Massaro story that broke a few years ago is really starting to pick up steam, and Ashley Banfield on News Nation is really covering this story. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, Stephanie McMahon has been basically not connected to any of this stuff, but Ashley Massaro's friend, I can't remember what her name was. The last name is Papilla. So she said that Massaro told her that her own drug, this is from the Observer, but he's just pulling it from Ashley Banfield's show on News Nation. Papilla said that Massaro told her that her own drug issues with a Soma addiction came from talent passing around the drugs. That's pretty widely known right there. She said in Kuwait, she was, I hate saying these words. So, but raped and sodomized. I hate saying that. Multiple times while in a drugged up state attempting to stay awake. She also said Massaro told her that a WWE executive who she didn't name actually took her from a room in a blanket in her hotel. So the company knew about it immediately. She also said the rest of the crew went home, but Massaro, due to her medical condition from essentially being almost paralyzed because of the drug, had to stay by herself in Kuwait after everybody else went home. She said Massaro had told her that she had spoken to Vince several times about the incident, corroborated the boardroom meeting where she was told not to report it, which WWE had always vehemently denied. And then she brought up that Vince had Stephanie to talk to her as a woman to be sympathetic. Pipia also corroborated that Massaro told Dr. Fernando Rios, who has since said that he was told by Massaro what happened, but the Massaro asked him to be quiet about it. So this is her friend basically confirming the story that Ashley Massaro had told her in 2006. And Constantine Kairos released the affidavit that Massaro signed during the concussion lawsuit that was going on. Now, that's a long affidavit, but it basically spells out everything that has been out there. So I'm not going to go and read in detail, but it names, it talks about the different injuries she suffered. And then, of course, the incident in Kuwait. And then also talked about Vince McMahon making a pass at her, almost trying to force himself on her. And then when she rebuffed him, trying to destroy her career by writing her terrible, like, dialogue lines on Raw. And that, when she had the script, she showed it to Michael Hayes, and Michael Hayes said, "Who the hell wrote this shit?" And she said, "Vince." And he goes, "Oh, them's the breaks, kid." And then she knew that her career was over. So, this story is not going away. It just keeps picking up steam. And, I don't feel like it's getting enough coverage in the wrestling mainstream. I know Dave's covering it pretty well. I know Wade is, but, and I know Rich and Joe are talking about it every week on Voices of Wrestling. So, if there's any new details, I'm going to bring them up here every single week, right at the front of the show.
Yeah, I will say, and you know, it's good for whoever does bring it up. I'm on one side okay with not every wrestling journalist covering it, purely from I want journalists covering the story, people who are used to covering serious issues and investigating and handling these topics with care. I don't need every wrestling blogger out there. The people who are going to take it seriously and do want to bring it up and take it seriously, more power to you. You have an audience, you have a voice, use it. But I am okay with not every wrestling journalist doing it because they're not used to covering these types of sensitive topics. Let the real journalists do that, and the people who do want to talk about it in serious issues. You have a position that you are used to big topics, big conversations. You have a very important voice, but not everybody does, so I'm okay with that. And it is important to note in the Ashley Massaro case, for those who may have forgotten, she did take her own life a few years ago. Yeah. And there was a lot of discussion after it happened over what could have caused her issues to want to lead her to do that. For wrestling fans who have, you know, known the story, I don't think there was any secret as to what led to some of her mental health issues. A lot of it's going to come back now. And in her case, there could be a lot more that comes out later for it.
Yeah. And her friend was on News Nation, and yeah, it's really hard to confirm like why somebody would do that, right? It's a touchy subject, but it was her opinion that it was this issue that led it to it. Probably one of the bigger issues that led to it, right? Because I'm sure there was a lot of things going on, but this was one of the things that kind of stuck with her that helped her make that decision.
Yeah, very. And don't want to speculate, especially for somebody that I've never talked to, known or anything. But that is a major life trauma that is a major snowball that leads downhill.
Yeah. And as far as like wrestling bloggers not covering it, that's fine. I just want you all to shut up. Like, I'm just not like, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't take you seriously. Like, you're essentially a fanboy at that point. If you can't cover both the good and the bad, I don't really have anything. I don't have any respect for you or their channel. So if all they want to do is cover the positive, if they want to be the Russell Joy for WWE, that's fine. I just don't find you to be a serious person. So I'm not interested in anything that you have to say. I am not a wrestling journalist, and I am very uncomfortable talking about this. Like, and you can see when I'm reading the Observer, those notes, like even saying those words out loud makes me uncomfortable. I don't like it, but I feel like it is important to not let this story go by, because that's exactly what WWE is trying to do. They're trying to get you to forget this story. They're, you know, the Rock's back. They're pointing everybody towards this storyline with Cody Rhodes and the whole thing. And now they got the Rock and the Bloodline. They want you to forget. Well, we're not going to forget. We're going to talk about it every single week. And it's always going to be, it'll always be the top story, and it's always going to be whatever storyline shit they have going on.
Yeah. I think the, I hate saying the good thing of this is it, whether it's covered in stories or not, it's now in the hands of the legal process. And whether or not PWI or Fightful or The Observer or, you know, Hard to Kill blog at youtube.net or whatever is covering it, judges are not going to forget. Lawyers are not going to forget. The right people who need to be investigating this now are not going to forget about it.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. The media can't put pressure on the judicial system to take things more seriously. And so, and honestly, I don't think that we would have pressure on the judicial system had, you know, Vice not done their story, had the Wall Street Journal not done their story. You know, the legal system has been using the media to get their stories across for a long time. And it's both good. It can be both good and bad. Like it can absolutely work against you. I think in this case, it's, you know, it's the two systems kind of working parallel together for a good cause. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate like Vice Media and Wall Street Journal kind of getting into this space in the wrestling thing. And because I just don't think we have enough people on this side that are, like you were saying, qualified to be able to do like these kinds of in-depth stories. So we're letting the professionals do the actual real stories. And then when they publish them, then we will talk about them on our shitty little wrestling blogs that we have.
Yeah, that is a very good viewpoint. And Vice, they've done so much important work in the past. So good on them for just not going away. And they've, you know, Vice has a tie to wrestling already. So this not going under their radar was to be expected, I would say. They knew of Vince McMahon. I think wrestling has so long just been the forgotten little niche corner of entertainment that anything could happen in it and nobody would care. Like outside of Owen and Benoit, like nobody outside of the niche corner of entertainment would care what was happening in WWE. So kudos to Vice for not letting everything go under the radar these last couple of years and bringing some of these dark stories to the forefront.
Yeah, and it's the best way to hold people accountable. But as more news breaks, we will continue to talk about it. We're going to move on from that topic, though. We got Josiah in the chat. Look, I know it's an off night tonight. I can tell because there's only one guy in the chat. So Josiah said Dynamite was actually pretty great this week. It was pretty great. And if JD had a chance to watch it, I think he would agree. It was kind of like a show geared towards JD. You know what? I'm going to go to another dark topic, and then the rest of the show is just going to be fun. Let's get the dark shit out of the way. The next story, dude, this one is a wild one. Joe, this is before your time, but Billy Jack Haynes, he actually wrestled in the WWF in 1987. He wrestled Hercules Hernandez at WrestleMania 3. I think WWF just called him Hercules, but it says right here, ABC News, Billy Jack Haynes has been taken into police custody in connection with the death of his wife in Portland, authorities say. Portland police said in a statement over the weekend that Haynes, 70, was in police custody at a local hospital undergoing treatment for a medical condition unrelated to the homicide or his contact with law enforcement. So ABC News probably doesn't know this, but Billy Jack Haynes has been in bad shape for a long time, and he's been batshit crazy for a long time. He's got some shoot interviews. He said at one point that he helped Bill Clinton kill people. this guy's wild, man. But Haynes was identified by police as the suspect in a fatal shooting of Jeanette Beecraft, 85. Police said they responded Thursday to reports of a shooting in a Portland neighborhood and requested help from special teams, including crisis and negotiators. KGW-TV reported that Haynes was detained 2 hours after 2 hours of negotiations. Police found Beecraft dead inside the home. A police spokesman person said on Monday they did not answer questions about the case, including whether Haynes had been released from the hospital, citing the ongoing investigation. It is not known whether Haynes had a lawyer who could speak on his behalf. I think it was reported later that he was choosing to represent himself. I think I could be wrong about that. But Billy Jack Haynes, man, he's a wild man, has been for a long time. He's kind of a scary guy, but it looks like he killed his wife, man. So it's just really another bad week in pro wrestling.
Bad start to the entire year for pro wrestling. Really, these last six weeks have not been filled with just fun storylines and banger matches.
we've been getting some of that here. I'm gonna pull up. Oh man, never mind. I went to go pull up the Billy Jack Haynes story, but it's behind a paywall. Let's see. Hold on. Former wrestler claims we witnessed murders of Don Henry and Kevin Ives. Let's see if this one has it. Okay. So here it says here, and I will pull this one up. So this, he is into all kinds of conspiracy shit, dude. This guy has been out there for a long time. So whenever the news broke that he'd killed his wife, like, nobody was like shocked by it.
Yeah.
So this is from Billy Jack. In August of 1987, I was contacted by the Arkansas criminal politician. He's talking about Playboy Bill Clinton there. Oh God, what happened? Where'd it go? Oh, okay. And asked if I would provide muscle at Arkansas drug stop, said Haynes while reading from a paper. The criminal politician suspected that some drug money stops were being stolen. So while conducting security during the alleged drug purchase, Haynes claimed he witnessed the murders of Henry and Ives. Haynes also claimed that the politician believed police officers were involved in the theft of the drug money. Haynes said that the teens were murdered by people working for the same criminal politician. He then said he met Linda Ives in 2016 and gave them the names of everyone involved in her to her private investigator. So this was like an open murder case, and he said that he was there, he was involved, and that Bill Clinton was involved. So this guy is just this guy's whacked, man.
So he's 77, right? So his heyday was probably the 70s and 80s.
He was believe it or not, Billy Jack Haynes was huge in Portland, where he still lives, right? Yeah. So Portland wrestling, working for Don Owen. He also, I think he did World Class for a little bit. He also did Florida, and he was in the WWF, but he just could not keep it together. He was just constantly kind of like bad, so
he was always,
you know, like
crazy,
this with the promoters. He was always crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. So name that cannot be blank. Billy Jack should never had a gun, although it's entirely possible it wasn't a registered gun. Yeah, I mean, people, like, you can prevent them from buying it legally. They'll just buy it illegally. That's how that shit works, unfortunately.
It's much easier to buy America. It illegally in most places.
Yeah. Billy Jack choosing to represent himself tracks seems like the type. Chris Adams, another terrible, crazy MF-er, was terrified of Billy Jack. Left world class when he heard Billy Jack was coming in, coming back once he left. Yeah, Joe Lanza talked about that on his podcast last night. This dude just always been like a crazy, wild dude, and people were just always afraid of him. But man, Billy, just an awful year so far with pro wrestling, man.
Yeah, rough start to the year. Hopefully. Most of the really dark news is behind us, but seeing how things have trickled out of the Vince McMahon story, I have a feeling the year's only going to get worse. So do try to take some of the good in with some of the bad. Don't let the bad go away, though.
Yeah. Don't let the bad go away. So, so he debuted as Billy Jack, a character based on the 1971 movie about a returning Vietnam veteran. So he debuted on October 29, 1982, and was immediately put into a feud with Rip Oliver. So that's in Portland. During that period, Chris Adams was in the promotion with wife Jeannie Clark. Haynes married Clark, who later married Steve Austin in 1983 and divorced her a year later. On December 12, 1982, Jack teamed with so he's just kind of going through the career here. So I pulled up the Observer. He started using the name Billy Jack Haynes in 1984. He just bounced around all the different territories, and he was a top guy, big time body guy. He used the full Nelson, a guy that just could never get out of his own way, an incredible talent, but he just never really made it as a top guy, unfortunately. And now he's probably going to go to jail the rest of his life, or he'll probably be hospitalized. I think it's probably more likely he'd be hospitalized, because he seems to be pretty mental.
Yeah, given his age at 77 years old, it'll probably be easier on the system if he's hospitalized, not having to deal with him in a prison.
Yeah. Oh, all right. So, guys, that's it for all the wacky stuff, all the dark stuff. So, okay. So, Joe, the WrestleMania main event right now is Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. So tonight on SmackDown, I saw the clip. The Rock basically became an official member of the Bloodline. We're heel Rock, 1998, 1999 Rock. He held up the Gun Club.
Yeah.
I saw he held up the Gun Club.
I think he was calling Utah losers. I think that's what he was doing. Because that's the Rock's humor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's now official. So night two is clearly looking like Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. Like that match has been signed. They've done commercials for it. That's happening. They very much were going to do Rock and Roman, and they saw the backlash and they pivoted, and the Rock's like, screw it, I'll just become a heel. So it looks to me like night one is probably going to be Rock and Roman versus Cody and Seth, right?
Yes. That's the impression from the press conference that I got. As soon as Rock slapped Cody and Seth jumped at Rock, had to be held back, I got the impression, oh, they're going to at least tease a tag match and see if they're interested, and probably do a Seth title match on night two. That way both shows are really, like, both nights are beefed up. But everything from the promo Seth gave on Raw Monday, which was his best promo in years, and everything from what The Rock said and stuff coming out of the Observer today, I fully believe a tag match is happening night one, and it's probably for the best. The Rock is 51 years old, and the dude is solid muscle. Like, his card, he got blown up just from smacking Jinder three times. You know, you're not going to get that WrestleMania cardio in 2 months. It's just not going to happen. So a tag match covers for him better. And honestly, his first match in what would be 11 years, probably better to have somebody like Cody and Rollins involved in it, who can carry a lot of the heavy lifting. So they could do the tag match. And honestly, I feel like they're going to do Cody or Roman versus Rock at a later date still. That tag match and night two will plant the seeds for a later Roman versus Rock match.
Yeah, you know, people are pointing at maybe Saudi for that match. I think Saudi, I think The Rock would want to have it at WrestleMania, but do they want to wait another year for it? I don't know that they would want to do that, because he could get, like, he can get a big movie offer, but to be honest with you, The Rock's kind of in a bit of a downturn in his movie career. Well, like, he's not the same hot commodity that he was a few years ago. And I still like The Rock's movies. Black Adam ruled. I don't care what anybody says, but he's not the big box office draw that he once was. He's sliding a little bit. He's like, you know, late 90s Schwarzenegger. You know, he's in that late 90s Schwarzenegger run, about the same age too, right around when Schwarzenegger had the heart attack, you know, before he did, I think it was End of Days. Before he did End of Days, like, his movie started to slide a little bit, and then he went and ran for governor.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got, Moana 2, I'm sure he'll be a part of. They're not going to do Moana without Maui. I don't know if Moana 2 has shelved the live-action Moana, which that absolutely should be shelved. We don't need a live-action Moana this
way. No, it's still happening, because still happening. People in Hawaii are, we're pissed about it here because they're not filming it here. you think they're doing casting calls in Georgia. So very there's this Facebook tropical. Page about, there's a Facebook page about Hawaii casting calls. Yeah. And because they film so many shows and movies out here, I keep looking at it like, hey, do you need a slightly overweight, balding 40-year-old man that's in the military? Do you need somebody like that to get shot? Because that's kind of the gig I want. I just want to go get, I want to play a dead guy.
NCIS Hawaii.
Yeah. So, you know what? And they had an open casting call. They're like, we're looking for military men. I was like, okay, great. That's perfect. That's me. They said 18 to 30. I'm like, you motherfuckers.
Damn.
That's discrimination.
That hat on backwards, you could pass for 29.
Yeah, but once I take my hat off, I'm like, 50.
But no, back to the topic of The Rock. We could get sidetracked. Sorry. I could see them doing it at WrestleMania 41. I could see them doing it at SummerSlam. They still haven't announced a venue for SummerSlam, which I think is interesting. I don't know when that announcement will be. If it were me, I don't know The Rock's schedule. I think in terms of ticket sales, he makes a bigger bump at SummerSlam than he does WrestleMania, right? Because at WrestleMania, you're going to get 60, 65,000 regardless. Is The Rock going to move 5, 10,000 more tickets at WrestleMania? Probably not. I mean, it's going to sell out or be close to sold out regardless. Now, SummerSlam that you're doing in a stadium, you might see a difference of, 35 to 40,000 compared to maybe 45 to 50,000 if it's Rock versus Roman. I think a bigger business bump happens if he does it at a SummerSlam stadium show as opposed to WrestleMania 41 or Saudi.
Yeah. I just think The Rock sees WrestleMania as like the it show. And I think that's where he would want to do it. And then if they wait till when WrestleMania is on Netflix, you're looking at a worldwide, exposure to where he'll actually get the numbers for that. So no, it's at the beginning of 2025 is when, never mind.
Raw
Peacock
is
Raw is Netflix, not the, so never mind.
Yeah. Well, so Peacock has the PLEs, unless they would try to negotiate a buyout, which there was talk this morning of Peacock merging with Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
So I could potentially see them wanting to cut costs. And if Netflix is interested, taking it over. But also, WWE does do a lot of live viewership for Peacock. So I don't know if you want to lose those live numbers. But 2026, and I believe it's the summer of 2026, that the PLE deal is up. And then I would 100% see it going to Netflix after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I could. I think that eventually Netflix is going to be all-inclusive with WWE.
Yeah,
I think that's the move, especially if that Peacock and Paramount Plus merger happens, because we just saw, I think 2 weeks ago it broke that ESPN, TNT Sports, and Fox Sports are coming together to have like their super sports app where all their channels are going to be on that one thing. It's essentially just going to be a cable package.
Yeah,
and I think they're going to call it Hulu Sports. I think that's what they're going to call it. That was a rumor, but.
Yeah, that's what's happening with all these major streamers is everybody's realizing on your own, you're not going to get enough subscribers to cover your debt. they should have just left it Netflix and Hulu and licensed their stuff out like they were doing before, and everybody was happy. But now everybody's just going to start merging together, and we've got streaming cable now. But going back to The Rock, yeah, I agree. He sees WrestleMania as the end all be all. It's the bigger platform for him. He's also on the board, and he does, as a board member, as a large shareholder, he's getting a lot of stock in this company. He does have to think about the business side of it too. And I think through the meetings over the next couple of months, he may see a bigger business investment doing it outside of WrestleMania, because he's going to make a bigger financial impact on a show that's not WrestleMania.
Yeah. I could see that. I mean, I think the betting odds would be WrestleMania, but I would say SummerSlam. It's not like, I don't think it's the most far-fetched thing. Yeah. And I think Saudi, honestly, I would say Saudi would be more likely than SummerSlam, because Saudi is becoming like the king of combat. Yeah. Well, it's like the king of combat sports. Like that's like the home of combat sports is replacing Vegas essentially.
Yeah.
Because all the biggest boxing matches are there now. And WWE holds a lot of their events there, and they just made the deal with the UFC. So UFC is going to start holding a bunch of big events there. And they'll probably start saving their bigger events for Saudi. It is as evil as that regime is over there, they have done a good job of sports washing their bullshit. And these promoters, that's what they care about the most is the money, and they're taking their business over there because it's, you know, the home of combat sports.
Not just the promoters, the performers. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Look at Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. Like, where are they taking their fights? You know, all the performers want the most money in their pocket, and I get it. You know, get it while you can, because you're not going to be able to get it for long. I could see Saudi paying more just to have The Rock on their show, and they already pay. Yeah. I think was it 40, 50 million per show,
something like that. Yeah.
I could see them paying an excess fee to have Rock versus Roman there. I don't think the Rock versus Roman match is going away now that Cody versus Roman is happening. And I've been talking with people. I think the Rock is the perfect opportunity after the Cody match for Roman to turn face down the line. The Rock is the perfect villain for Roman to finally turn face after 3-4 years now.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go to the chat. John Muse says the Super Bowl commercial has those four guys facing each other, most likely a tag. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the smart play there. And then he says Roman will put the belt over blood, breaks the blood oath that Rock made a big deal about with his family tree bit. So yeah, I think the way you do it is night one, Roman gets pinned because like the Rock fucks up. And then afterwards, Roman turns on the Rock. I think that's probably where they go. And then on night two, Rock helps Cody win the belt. Like, or the Rock fights off the bloodline.
I hate fantasy booking when I'm actually interested in the story, because sometimes when things are going well, if you try to put your own ideas into it, even if the payoff that you get is good, if it's not yours, you still get disappointed. I like the idea of Rock taking the pin because Roman messes up, and then night two, Roman loses and the Rock gets angry, and then you start having Solo and Jimmy and Heyman looking to the Rock instead of Roman and planting the seeds that the Rock is, you know, Roman may be the tribal chief. The Rock is the high chief. Roman can have his tribe. The Rock's got everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's crazy, and then I'm interested to see if like the extended, you know, family tree, you know, the Tongans, you know, Tamatonga, Tongaloa, Hikuleo, Jacob Fatu coming in.
I think there's going to be more than just the bloodline in this. They teased Heyman and Bron Breakker last week on SmackDown when Heyman came in to the came in to talk to Nick Aldis. And Bron Breakker was there, and Heyman just was smiling as big as he could. I think they're going to bring other superstars who are not just bloodline related.
Joe, hold on. You can say wrestlers on the show. You don't have to say superstars.
Wrestlers, superstars, whatever. Professional wrestling superstars,
right.
Sports entertainment.
It's that Fed pill that you were given as a child.
But this story is very sports entertainment though, right? It's very superstar-ish. It's because the wrestling aspect of this story is so second nature. It's not what everybody's going to care about. It's not AEW where the match is what matters, right?
Yeah.
It's the mic work. It's the looks, the teases. That's going to matter in this story.
Well, in WWE, it's celebrity wrestling. Everybody is larger than life, essentially. And,
yeah.
AEW has the great stories too, but not everybody is the most larger than life character. It's a different type of. It's WCW and WWF.
It's comparing Breaking Bad to the Avengers, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's very entertainment. It's on the big screen the same way, but it's a different type of entertainment. Are you watching The Godfather or Scarface? Both great movies, very different type of movies, even though it's the same, you know?
Yeah. I feel you on that. So speaking of AEW, so Lucha Libre, CMLL has invaded AEW, and we're covering here. They're actually going to send over the BCC to CMLL on March 28th. They're selling tickets, are already selling like hotcakes. It's actually going to be the biggest sellout, I think, on record for Arena Mexico. A sellout ahead of time. Essentially, in Mexico, it's very walk-up heavy. People just show up to the arena and buy their tickets. But people are buying their tickets early for this one, and that's not really normal. And it's because of this big match they got coming up. But Dave had an interesting note here. And I love the fact that Americans are learning about Lucha Libre politics. So AEW has entered into the Lucha Libre politics game. So it says, Dave says, as noted before, the deal with CMLL is that on any television show that their talent appears on, no other Mexican wrestlers can appear. It doesn't matter if they work for AAA or not. It did in the past, but it's no other Mexican wrestlers can appear. Some of the prior Mexican talent is mad that Tony Khan agreed to those terms, noting that AAA never made a demand like that for AEW to not feature CMLL talent, even though they were warring in Mexico. We do know that at the start, that Tony Khan's vision was to work with everyone in the early days. CMLL didn't allow its talent to go there because they were working with AAA, and New Japan didn't work with them under the Harold Mage regime. It was noted that Penta and Phoenix were in AEW from day one in particular, and the feeling it's disrespectful to them. So that line was essentially written by Conan, emailed to Dave, and Dave copied and pasted it into the Observer. where was I? It said it was disrespectful to them that there would be shows, including perhaps multiple pay-per-views this year, including any pay-per-view from anyone from CMLL is booked on. They couldn't even be allowed on the show. Previously, it was just Forbidden Door. There was an incident with Penta coming off the Jericho Cruise where he stayed for Dynamite as he was under the belief that he was booked on and was there, only to find out that he couldn't appear on the show because they had booked CMLL guys for both Rampage and Dynamite. Dude, this Lucha Libre war between CMLL and AAA is hilarious.
It's funnier than AEW versus WWE. It really is. I think I want to credit the right Twitter account. I think it was Lucha Blog that tweeted out today. So that every 2 months, AEW fans or American fans get to find out that CMLL and AAA do not like each other. There's so much bad blood there.
Yeah, I didn't realize the extent of it. You know, the funny thing is that there's been some shows recently that had CMLL talent on there, and other Mexican wrestlers were there, like Commander would wrestle on those shows.
Yeah.
But it seems like as AEW and CMLL kind of cement their partnership, AEW kind of bends more to their will a little bit and does not want to disrespect them. And the fact that that's disrespectful is just bonkers to me. But here Josiah in the chat says, Conan trying to stir stuff up with CMLL. Yeah, Conan actually took to Twitter and said that it's awful when politics gets in the way of wrestling or something like that. Yeah. And he probably just got done sending the email to Dave. And Josiah says the story changed as Commander worked the show with CMLL talent on it. My theory is that it was Conan. Yeah. So it would be interesting to see if Commander or Penta or Phoenix anytime soon wrestles on a show with CMLL talent. But what I've been saying is I think that Penta and Phoenix are probably going to try to leave AAA and go to CMLL. And I think Phoenix is already a free agent in Mexico. I don't think he's in a contract to AAA anymore. So he's no longer a AAA guy. But I don't think it's that far-fetched. I know a lot of people shit on me like last week or the week before when I said that Roosh would probably go back to CMLL. I think if his AEW paycheck, like if it helps his paycheck, right, and helps the relationship, I think they could probably come together to work a deal to where Roosh could actually return to CMLL. I don't think that's too crazy.
And I think that's probably what Konnan is afraid of, right? That you have your AAA guys working with AEW and the owner of AEW is getting a good working relationship with your biggest rival in CMLL. And if you're a Mexican wrestling talent who works for AAA and your contract comes up, does it serve you better in AEW to work with AAA or CMLL? Like, who is Tony going to view you more favorably working for if it's going to be the company that he has the better working relationship with? So I could see Konnan being upset about that.
Yeah. But he knows the deal here. He clearly sees that AAA is getting pushed out here.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, AAA was it hard to kill. Antonio Pena was it hard to kill and signed a fake agreement with TNA. We have not seen any AAA talent since then, actually.
Yeah.
In TNA. Well, you know, Vikingo was on the tapings after that, but since like they went to Orlando or Kissimmee, Florida, like no, there were no AAA talents on that show except for Laredo Kid, who happens to just work for TNA. He's like more of a TNA guy at this point. He's on every show. So yeah, let's see. Oh, Josiah's back. He says for AEW, the CMLL deal is definitely better. They are less of a mess backstage. It wasn't that long ago that they were a pretty big mess too. That during the pandemic damn near killed CMLL dead. But they're rising up, man. So good for them. But
you may have to correct me if I'm wrong, but they were fairly interested in selling to WWE, right? And the holding point was WWE didn't want to buy Arena Mexico. Was that true?
You know, I think I vaguely remember that story. Oh, but hold on. Josiah is talking crap. Hold on. It's my Canadian. Mike, if Antonio Pena was there, that'd be remarkable as they would have to dig him up. Who was it? Oh, it was Dorian Roldan. Yeah, look, that's how old I am. I'm talking about the original guy, Antonio Pena. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah. Vince McMahon Sr. was there. Okay.
Yeah.
My bad. Oh man. So let's get into the TNA and Scott D'Amore news. So a lot has been said. I want to get your take on this as somebody that watches TNA occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to have your interest a little bit with their return and Hard to Kill and of course the Josh Alexander and Will Ospreay match, but you know, they went ahead and fired Scott D'Amore and Ed Nordholm, the guy that kind of brought them to this point. And they put a stooge in his place, Anthony Chichone, and a guy that used to be on their television show called Dr. Ariel is now taking over as kind of like the head of production or head of creative there. And
Tommy Dreamer's real name or?
No. So Dave reported that Dreamer was head of creative, but Dreamer wanted to get out in front of it. He's like, you know, he saw that, you know, Big Con and PCO were wrestling and No Surrender. He's like, hold on, guys, that fucking wasn't me.
Yeah.
That was not me. I am not the head of creative. I have a boss. So he wanted to come out and make sure that everybody knew that he was not the one booking this shit. So Scott D'Amore booked No Surrender. And then after that, I guess it's going to be the creative team running it through Ariel Schnerner. However, I can't pronounce his last name. But that's what it looks like going forward.
So when I first seen the news, my first thought was to text you and say, LOL TNA, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, cause I don't watch weekly, you know, I don't watch a lot of wrestling weekly. I mostly pick big matches. And over the last, I don't know, year and a half, maybe 2 years, a lot of those big matches were starting to come from TNA and a lot of them were Josh Alexander.
Yeah.
I was getting really excited about TNA being a viable third option where younger talent could go and develop and TNA could really build themselves back up because they were a good spot. You know, they were becoming a very good spot. Scott D'Amore was very much that guy. He was the one figurehead in American wrestling, at least, and maybe in all of wrestling that any fan who watched the product loved the guy. You know, there's a lot of AEW fans who say, oh, God, Tony Khan's on his shit again. Most WWE fans or just wrestling fans in general have despised Vince McMahon for decades. Even Bushiroad over in Japan, a lot of people are not liking what they're doing. Nobody had anything bad to say about Scott D'Amore. The talent, the fans, everybody involved was loving what he was doing in TNA. And honestly, I hope it works out for him, but I don't see it going well. I hope the creative team they have can keep the ball rolling in the direction that he had it going. But that is such a bonehead move.
Yeah. You know what? Scott D'Amore and Lou D'Angeli. Lou D'Angeli is kind of like their live events coordinator. And I think they did a really good job of being able to make their show bigger, despite the fact that their creative had not been good for a long time. They were just getting towards these really good matches, and they were trying to have really good matches, but the stories just were not all that compelling. It was very paint by numbers. And so you can overcome some bad storytelling with really good matches.
Yeah.
You can overcome bad matches with really good storytelling. Ideally, you would like to have a little bit of both, and they were missing both ingredients because there were like these ebbs and flows of the company. But I would say since Don Callis left, who was kind of like they're probably the most creative guy in that room, it had been kind of paint by numbers. So they had a lot of really cool stories when Callis was there. And then once he left and he went to AEW, it kind of went downhill a little bit creatively. Now, once he left, Scott D'Amore was able to bridge the gap with New Japan, right? He was able to bring New Japan back in as a partner. Which led to some really like cool and exciting events and really cool matches and stuff like that that they were able to put together. You know, Okada comes back, Ospreay comes back, Tanahashi did some matches for them, did some world title matches. So he really did bring it to where it was at with just his, you know, deal making abilities. And with just having a roster that was super hungry and wanting to fight for him, you know what I mean? And they have removed that. And I think that's sad.
Scott D'Amore seemed to build the bridge between every company possible because he would have New Japan guys work with him. He would have AEW guys work with him. And then he'd send his women's champion to the Royal Rumble at WWE. Yeah. The guy was willing to work with and seemed like everybody was willing to work with him. That's just a good guy to have around. I wish that they could have just spent more time and figured out what was going on, make it better, find some common ground. I don't know if we'll ever get the real truth because one side's going to say this, the other side's going to say that. But it just seemed like it would have been in the best interest of all parties to figure out a way to make this work. Personally, I think Scott D'Amore should, I think he's got a small indie promotion. I think there's been a gap for an Evolve type company that's not, you know, it's not AEW, not TNA, not looking to make TV, but still holding big events that can help young talent get to the next level. He seems like the perfect guy to do that.
Yeah. Well, he has Border City Wrestling. It's been, indie for a long time, and now he can kind of focus on that. He owns that promotion. They have their own wrestling school. It's Josh Alexander is the lead trainer for, which means you're probably going to crank out some pretty good talent. Yeah. So. And a lot of great talent to come through that school. Like he's a really good trainer, and which is why he's so close to all these wrestlers, is because like he hires a lot of people that he personally had like a hand in training and booking and things like that. So I could see him just kind of going back. Look, he's independently wealthy. I could see him putting some money into Border City Wrestling, and I don't see him like starting. I don't see him like running opposition. Meaning, like, I don't see him like doing something like an NWA or a MLW or something like that. But I could see him absolutely like doing big things, the Border City, doing some shows in Detroit and Windsor, that John Muse will likely, you know, go to.
Yeah. Like I said, there is that gap there in the indie wrestling scene right now for the bigger indie shows.
Yeah.
And the guy's built up a lot of, I don't know, good credit or whatever with the wrestling talent. Everybody seems to like him. I could see some people willing to work for him if their contract comes up in TNA. Not going to be anything where it's a permanent job for him, but, you know, say somebody like Jordan Grace, somebody like Josh Alexander, you know, if they're not going to make the jump immediately to AEW or WWE. If you're the company at TNA, if you're Anthem, you've got some ground to make up with these people because all reports are a lot of them are not very happy right now.
Yeah, they all wrote a bunch of them got together to write like a letter.
They did a letter writing campaign. Yeah.
And there's like there's some folks online in like one of the TNA Facebook pages that I follow. I post my shit in there sometimes. And they did a change.org. It's like, I don't know. Is that legal in Canada? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, can that, like, they signed a petition online to get Scott D'Amore hired back. You know, and I talked about it. I talked about it earlier today on Brace for Impact, which is actually out on Patreon.com. So go to Patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. I think we did I covered this topic this morning. I was just curious to what you had to say, but they essentially merged over into this Anthem Entertainment group under this Chone guy. Yeah, we're gonna call him Anthony Chone Chone. That's what we'll call him. Yeah. Fans of American Me will understand that joke. So some of the older guys who've maybe seen American Me know exactly what I'm talking about. So Chone Chone put everybody under this umbrella, and they kind of revamping things a little bit. And really, what they're looking for is they're calling it efficiency. They're using these buzzwords. They're going to streamline things. They're just going to do budget cuts. So essentially, we're going to have similar creative stuff with a slashed budget. They're probably going to strip it down quite a bit. Joe Lanza talked about it on his show last night. He's got some connects inside TNA. They're not making money. They really just get a budget from Anthem, and that's how they produce their television show, is just based off of a budget, because they don't have a rights fee per se. So they're not really making any money. Their money comes from all of their international deals and their YouTube and TNA Plus, which they're probably not getting much out of, their pay-per-views. Although Hard to Kill did over 30,000. So you're probably looking at a pretty good chunk of a good number there, like a good dollar figure amount there. But they're not really making a ton of money, so they're probably spending much more than they're actually raking in. So they're not, and they just kept asking for money despite not bringing in the money. Yeah. So it's kind of sucks for them. I can see their budget getting slashed. I can see some contracts getting cut. I think it's going to be a tough next quarter here for TNA.
Yeah, pretty much all of the last half of last year, I was praying for Will Ospreay, sign there. Mercedes, sign there. Okada, somebody, get a big name. Get CM Punk. Man, am I glad that didn't happen now. Because, those contracts probably wouldn't have been cut because they would have been the most valuable. But seeing one of those big stars in a stripped down TNA would have been a sad sight to see.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The whole thing sucks. And it sucks for my podcast. So Joe, you sent this one to me earlier. There was a female writer that left. I can't remember her name. Do you remember what her name was?
Jennifer. I feel bad for forgetting, because she really was my favorite writer in WWE.
Yeah.
I've known her name her entire career there.
For
15 years.
Jennifer Pepperman was a writer and producer, was released from WWE. And, she was probably the greatest writer that they had. And I really hope that Tony Khan signs her.
Yeah. Yeah. And, she did all of the best things that, the WWE women's division has seen. One storyline that everybody loved was definitely her. The funny thing that I can't remember if it was The Observer or PWI who reported it, that, she just wanted something different. And it should be noted who she was close friends with.
Ooh.
Mercedes Moné. Maybe Jennifer was wanting more Moné in her bank account.
Well, Tone Khan is really throwing that money around right now. So maybe he's going to be bringing over Pepperman. In Iron Man, what was Gwyneth Paltrow's name in that movie? Pepper Potts. That's what it made me think of. Pepper Potts.
Because Stan Lee likes to do a lot of same letter names, Pepper Potts, the PP, Bruce Banner. He's really into that.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. Okay, Drew McIntyre contract. Are they going to re-sign Drew McIntyre? I mean, they got it, right?
Yeah. They're teasing that CM Punk match so hard.
Yeah.
That won't be able to happen for 8 to 9 months at the earliest. I don't think Drew leans into that so hard if he's not going to be around. The Observer added that time has been added to his contract, so it's not up in April. They haven't said how much time. I'm sure no one aside from Drew and a few key people in the TKO verse will know. He's not going anywhere, and he's probably not going to take any time off. I think he's going to win the title at Mania. I think he's.
You think he beats Seth?
I think he beats Seth on night two, with the help of The Rock. Drew is going to be the perfect corporate champion. You will be right. The perfect corporate champion.
All right. Well, Joe is predicting that old Drew McIntyre.
Not a prediction. It's a spoiler.
No, it's just the former TNA champion, Drew Galloway, yeah. is going to be the WWE bronze gold medal winner. He's going to be the bronze medal winner, yes. Drew McIntyre, getting the third tier championship from off of Seth Rollins. Boy, did they make that title look like shit over this whole storyline with Roman Reigns and Cody.
Yeah.
They totally shit on the whole thing.
Yeah, Drew's going to be the guy to make it look better. He's going to look great with that belt.
Yeah. Oh, hopefully. Hold on. Stephen Patrick in the chat says, I read that Access TV is looking to rebrand as well. Yeah. You know, I read PW Insider had that earlier today. I don't know what that means. But I did feel like that was the most interesting part of that story, that Access TV is looking to rebrand, but I don't even know what that would mean, because we thought that, you know, so TNA did the rebrand. We thought they're overhauling their production studio, but apparently that money just went nowhere because it looks exactly the same. They just hired a new graphics department. So I don't know what they would do with Access TV. My idea, and I had this whenever TNA was announced that they were relaunching, I was like, Access needs to call up Paramount and said, hey, look, guys, you're not using the name Spike TV. Let us just buy the name Spike TV, right? And we will do like a barter deal or something. Like, we'll give you our REO Speedwagon videos that you can put on your shitty VH1. And just let us have the name Spike. And then Access TV could be rebranded to Spike TV. I said last year they should do that. And now I do know that one member of their creative team follows me, and we have DM'd before. And maybe he took that idea and presented it to the Access TV bosses. I don't know. But if that does happen, I am taking complete and total full credit for it. But yeah. I think that Spike TV was an awesome channel. It was perfect for guys like me, just like dudes who like to watch like dude shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was a very toxic, you know, toxic masculinity channel. And I think we need to bring it back.
I used to watch 1,000 Ways to Die and Mansers on there. Did you ever watch Mansers?
I did. And they actually had some like really cool documentaries on there. Like one of my favorite Muhammad Ali documentaries called Facing Ali was from Spike TV. I just thought that was good. Yeah. So I think that's where they go. Like that's what they should do. Now I don't know. I don't feel like they got that kind of balls, but hopefully.
No. Is Access TV, I feel like the only thing aside from wrestling I've ever seen on there is like music related docs or like music concerts. Do they do anything aside from that?
No. So it's music game shows. Like they have Cash Cab, and then like they have Eddie Trunk going to concerts and giving out concert tickets. They got like best of the 80s, best of the 90s. They got, so the one thing that did come out today was that Eric Young is going to be hosting a TV show in there called Vinyl, something about Vinyl Rescue or something, like where he's going to go around and look for like records. So he's gonna be doing that, like looking for, I don't know, just going around all these antique shops or something and looking for records. But
that's the kind of stuff that the demographic that TV channels really want to see, right?
Yeah,
that's your 18 to 31 or 18 to 49 graphic right there.
Yeah, they're going for the Joe Biden Donald Trump demo as well. And I think they got it nailed down, just like people falling asleep at their TV because they're watching Sammy Hagar videos at like, you know, 9 in the morning. And they go to bed at 6, and hopefully they leave on the TV long enough to keep Impact going.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I don't know. Access TV really needs to decide what the channel wants to be, and where TNA fits in that. Going back to Scott D'Amore, I think I texted you this as soon as the news broke. But like without Scott D'Amore, TNA is probably just a tape library on Peacock right now. You know, and honestly, if they're going to be making budget cuts, if they're not making money, I could still see that happening in the future, or maybe just the tape library that Tony Khan owns. I mean, WWE is not the only player in terms of buying tape libraries anymore. I could see Tony Khan wanting to buy them and being a part of whatever they do with Warner in the future. But you've got to decide what you want to be. And with the way the media landscape is shaping out this year, you got to decide pretty fast.
I think they just want it to be like the way that Sinclair treated TNA or treated Ring of Honor. They just want it to be cheap programming for their stations, because they're not going to get rid of their stations, because the stations, that's Anthem. They have a bunch of different like small channels that sound barely any cable, you know, properties. And TNA is number one on all of them. Like they have, you know, Game TV and, you know, they used to be on the hunting channel called Pursuit. They used to be on there, but they're on, you know, Fight Network in the US and in Canada, and they're on, they have a fantasy sports channel, and that I think Eric Young hosted show on there, like about like fantasy hockey or something like that. So they have a lot of channels, and you know, TNA is like number one on most of those channels. So that's why they like it. They just don't want to spend any money on it anymore. They want to get the budget under control because they were like, they're not, because
are any of these Anthem channels on any streaming services like YouTube TV, Hulu Live, any of that?
No. So they, Sling, I believe, and Philo is what they were on. And then I know I just canceled my Spectrum again, but they were on like Spectrum. You can get the Spectrum app, and I had the Spectrum app here. So they were on that. So yeah, they just, let's see, Twan Mac here in the chat says Verizon dropped access on January 1st. Yeah. So they just lost Verizon Fios, which they covered a part of the Northeast. So that's pretty tough there, but they did get expansive coverage on Xfinity. So they're on Xfinity in a lot more markets. So, I don't think that they just dissolve it completely because Scott D'Amore offered to buy it and they turned him down. Yeah. They didn't even make a counter offer. They didn't even provide what their number would be. They just said no. So that doesn't mean they wouldn't be willing to sell, because I bet if somebody came with a strong offer, they would sell it. But you would have, if you're going to make a strong offer, it would have to be more than just a tape library. You would be buying something that you think is viable, that is going to make you money long term, and which means you're going to be running live events and hoping to get a TV deal. That would be the only reason to pay for it at a higher price, right? If you had a TV deal in your back pocket, but they didn't even entertain it. So let's see. Let's go back to the chat. King of the North said they should cut you in on the deal, Mike. Absolutely, dude. I'll negotiate that deal. Hell yeah! Like, who else is thinking of this fucking shit? It's only me. Yeah. Io says 1,000 Ways to Die and Repo Games. Yeah, and then they had Pros versus Joes. You guys remember that show? That was a cool show. I saw Jerry Rice like burning some dudes on there, and like, Roy Jones Jr. beat somebody up, and I think so did Tito Ortiz.
Yeah.
They said make it a movie or a sports channel. Like, you can have both. Like, they have HDNet movies, so you know it doesn't have to be a movie channel. But like on Monday nights, you could have like movie of the week, and then you could bring like Tuesday night fights back, like they used to be on USA back in the day. And then like, you know, Thursday could be TNA, and then you can do, if you want to do concerts on the weekends or whatever, you got Invicta FC. They're supposed to be starting up a boxing promotion. Like, I think that would be cool. And they would all be on like a newly revamped Spike or something like that. I think that would be cool. But I just don't find these people to be very serious. And I just don't think that they would invest what would be necessary to be successful.
Yeah. I like your idea. And going back to the 1,000 Ways to Die, I just got to say my favorite part about that TV show was how every person who died on there of some crazy batshit way always turned out to be the hugest dick in the world. And you were rooting for them to die in one of those 1,000 ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, bring back Spike TV, do it. Like,
yeah,
there's really, I don't know, that kind of TV is missing, and everyone wants that 18 to 49 graphic. There's that demographic there, that 30 to 45 year olds who are still going to watch live TV if it's the right shit for them, you know?
Dude, I'm one of few people. My wife was like, why do you want cable again?
Yeah.
And like, why do you need to have like a TV guide on a cable guide? And I was like, I just want to see what shows are on.
Yeah.
And she's like, but you have all these on-demand options. I was like, I know, but I want to tune into the channel.
I have every TV show or movie I could ever want at my fingertips. And I still like pulling up a live guide just to see what's out there. It's how you discover new stuff. I don't trust other people's opinions because people are stupid. I want to find new stuff myself.
Yeah. Speaking of stupid, it is that time. It is returning. We are going to bring it back. It's been a long time since we've done this, but it is now time for Bad Tweets. Bad Tweets is back. So this bad tweet comes from Gerard. Gerard from bodyslam.net at beardown316, and you can tag him in this bad tweet. He said, because he and I had this whole discussion, we had a whole debate the other day, and I told him this was coming, and I said, my friends are eligible for bad tweets too. So he says, Tony Khan accusing Rossi of being a double agent and then hiring Rocky Romero to do the same thing is certainly a choice. That's a bad tweet because that didn't happen. like he hired Rocky Romero, and I've explained this to Drew, so we're like fine now. And I think I'm a bad influence on people. I'm a bad influence on Gerard, especially when I get on my conspiracy kicks. Yeah. Like, I think he was getting like conspiracy brain a little bit on that deal, thinking that Tony Khan brought Rocky Romero in to poach talent from New Japan and from CMLL, when in fact he's there to, like, he's going to be doing the same job for AEW that he currently does for New Japan. He's going to be doing it for both companies. So he didn't actually take anybody.
Yeah.
If anything, he would be a guy that could help, you know, bridge the gap between CMLL and New Japan, which I think he's like, that's part of his deal, is to be the liaison. Mm-hmm. He's going to be that guy to prevent these people from going over to WWE. Now, he did think that was a bad thing. It's like, well, you're hindering them from making the most money. I was like, no, he's not their agent. Right, he would just be like, hey, come over here instead of going over there. But if they have an agent and WWE offers them more money, then they would go. Nobody's going to stop them. Yeah. But he would be a guy to help prevent like an Okada from going to WWE. But I don't think Tony Khan is going to be like targeting Yoda Tsuji or Shota Umino in the next year or two to offer them, you know, 7-figure contracts, and that Rocky is the reason why that's happening. I just don't see that being the case.
No, but you know, Zack Sabre Jr., on the other hand, whose contract does come up next year, probably.
Yeah, but that's not a poach. Like, their contract expires, yeah, right? And Zack Sabre Jr. has been in New Japan for almost a decade. I think he's been there since 2016, right? And so,
probably like, longer than that.
Yeah, he's not going to stay there forever. And so if you have a guy that is connected with New Japan, and New Japan would rather their guy go to, you know, AEW versus WWE, then I think that's a good thing. I don't see this as a bad thing. Now, I will say, every guy that AEW has signed off the New Japan roster has not gone back to AEW or New Japan.
Yeah.
Jay White has not wrestled a single match in New Japan other than at Forbidden Door since he left. Right. And it's been the case for all the other talents that they brought back. Now, Takeshita has gone back to DDT at times, mm-hmm. but the New Japan guy, like Aussie Open, they haven't gone back. So maybe I think that's worth looking into, right? Where New Japan is, you know, they want to send their people to AEW versus WWE so they get access to them later. Well, that just has not been the case. Like, yeah, it just hasn't happened other than at Forbidden Door.
Yeah. You know, and I was thinking about this specifically earlier, for those New Japan guys and really all of AEW talent, you do have the access to do a lot of stuff outside of AEW. Why would you want to, if you're getting paid full-time money and you don't have to work full-time, why would you risk going back to New Japan and potentially getting hurt and losing your spot in AEW? Why would you risk going to an indie show and risk getting hurt over something?
Well, so the older guys, they like keeping, like, more matches is better for them.
Yeah.
In their opinion, right? These young kids that are their Private Party and some of these other little shits, they don't work anywhere because they're lazy. Right. Yeah. Like all these other guys that are like Sky Blue works everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
But all these other like younger cats, they're just coasting in AEW and they're not improving. They should be working everywhere.
Are they lazy or are they getting paid full time money for part time work? If you had the choice between the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What would you do?
But I'm lazy. I would do it. Yeah. But you know what? But here's the thing, is they're not getting any better.
Yeah.
They're just not. They're not like Hook is not better today than he was a year ago. He just isn't.
But he does work for a company that has at this point, what, between Ring of Honor and AEW, 11 hours of weekly TV. Use them.
Book
them. Get better. Use them. It's not always, it takes both. It takes the wrestler and the booker. Use the people you have on your roster, you know?
Yeah.
And if they're not improving, go ahead and kick Big Swole out the door because she's not a good wrestler. Go ahead and kick other people out the door if they're not improving. I mean, use them or lose them.
Hold on. We got some smart asses in the chat always correcting me. Let's see. King of the North said, Jay White lost a match where he can't go back. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. He lost a match and he can't go back unless Eddie Kingston says yes. And who has control over Eddie Kingston saying yes? Not Eddie Kingston.
Josiah says, as for Aussie Open, Mark Davis is injured. Yeah, but Kyle Fletcher is not hurt. He could go back. But yeah, AEW talents are appearing on New Japan shows. Well, of course they are. How do you look? Moxley, New Japan is selling all them tickets because they put Moxley and Kingston on top. They're not selling those tickets because they got fucking Naito on top. You take Moxley out of there, they're not selling all them tickets. It's just not happening.
Yeah, Moxley, and especially more lately, it seems like, is making it a point to go back to New Japan. Danielson loves doing the big shows over there. I wish Claudio would get to do more. I would love to see Claudio in the G1 this year. I really would.
Yeah. Let's see. And then so King of the North says, also to note, New Japan World has the TV distribution rights in Japan for AEW. Yeah, that's true. So so there you go there. All right. One more bad tweet. Let me see. Pull it up here. I got one more. And this one's disappointing. I like burying my friends. So like me making fun of Gerard, I like to do that. Yeah. But I was not coming for this guy. This guy, O'Shea Jackson Jr., Ice Cube Jr. Okay. This fucking guy. I've taken it easy on this dude because he's Ice Cube's kid. And Ice Cube is a hero of mine.
Yeah.
Like legitimately, I loved the NWA. I loved his music. Like Predator is one of the greatest fucking records ever made. Friday to this day, if it's on, I can recite every single word in that movie while I'm watching. I just can't. Right. I just happen to really like Ice Cube. And so I'm like, okay. And I thought O'Shea Jackson, Ice Cube Jr., I thought Junior was really good in the NWA movie. I thought he did awesome.
Yeah.
And he's been in some other movies. I'm like, this guy's pretty, actually pretty good little actor. Like, he's probably not going to be his dad. He's not going to be a big star, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But he's been, he's fed pilled as well. He's been out there trolling AEW fans. He's having a good time trolling AEW fans. But this is where he messed up. Cause now he's just like, he bullshits a lot, but now he's just saying like something that just isn't true. And he said WWF made War Games to spite Dusty's creation, Starrcade. So, Joe, can I tell you who created War Games?
Dusty Rhodes did.
Dusty Rhodes did.
Now, I want to say, hold on. No, because he is 100% wrong, but
yeah,
I hope he just mixed up the names because Vince created Survivor Series.
Yeah,
he despite did. Dusty's creation. So hopefully he just got, because the last 2 years it's been Survivor Series War Games.
Yeah.
So hopefully he just got those two confused.
My dude,
just do a little bit only... research. Just that much more research before you tweet. Think before you tweet.
Yeah. Think before you tweet, or you end up on bad tweets. Which actually, never mind. Don't think before you tweet because I need more content. So
there's plenty of content out there, my dude.
It is very likely that that he meant Survivor Series, but look at my dude Josiah down there at the bottom, getting all kinds of likes. He said Dusty invented War Games, my dude. but in his Canadian voice, and like he's a pastor too, so he's doing it like the most polite way. He's like, now go with God, O'Shea.
Oh man. And you know what? There's 13,000 views on that tweet, and probably 12,000 of them are sitting there thinking, WWF did create War Games just to spite Dusty.
That's so funny. Well, that was it for bad tweets today. Let's see. John Muse says, this is not the only bad take by O'Shea. So O'Shea's takes are just because he just prefers WWE over AEW. And so he likes to antagonize people. And a lot of the stuff he says is just stupid, right? But I have been giving him a pass because I just see him for what he is. He's a guy looking for attention from wrestling fans, despite the fact that he's a pretty successful actor. Now, who put it in here? Oh, yeah. IAO Production says Den of Thieves. I have not seen Den of Thieves. Have you seen that one, Joe? But a lot of people have told me that this is a really good movie. So I might actually add this to my list. Cause look, I don't like his Twitter behavior. I think he's an idiot, but I think the guy's pretty good on TV. I like him.
I'll get it up tonight.
There you go. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. What else we got? You miss Ryan Satin arguing with Meltzer. Yeah, you know, arguing with Ryan Satin, you might as well argue with a, you know, a bucket of paint. He's an idiot.
Yeah.
And then lastly, IO Productions says, O'Shea just having fun messing with wrestling fans. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you can tell he's being disingenuous, and so you got to call it out when you see it. Yeah. But guys, everybody in the chat, I really do appreciate you for being here. Please do me the favor. I'm going to do this one more time because we really do want to support JD. I really want you guys to go to the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel, and please, please, please do me the big favor of liking, JD's video. He doesn't know that I'm doing this, and knowing JD, he's probably not watching because he's, you know, traveling, and when is he going to have time to watch? But I want you to like his movie, the, Independence, Wrestling with a Community. I'm pulling it up right now, and here, I'll mute this, but it's JD's movie. He wrote, he directed it, he produced it. It is a documentary movie that he went to Independence, Iowa, and he spent a long time with this wrestling team, like an entire season with the wrestling team. He actually moved to Iowa for a little bit and filmed this documentary. It's really, really good. Please do me a favor, go and hit the like button, and then go down and then just drop a comment on there and tell JD you like this movie. And that way we can defeat the algorithm there. So I would really greatly appreciate that. Please, please do me that favor. Let's support our guy JD, especially while he's out traveling for the state wrestling championships. But guys, that is going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. JD should be back next week, so no more Joe. You guys are off the hook for listening to Joe. So no more Joe. Stay tuned for on Patreon. Joe and I are actually going to take five, and then we're going to come right back, and we're going to record the latest edition of Sting's Greatest Rivals. And TNA fans in the chat, you're going to want to hear this. We're doing Sting versus Kurt Angle. Joe actually spent his entire day watching Sting and Kurt Angle matches. I think, how many did you watch today? Four? Did you watch four?
I watched three. Three.
Okay, I watched four because I actually watched the empty arena match that they did too. So I watched actually four. So yeah, so that's what we're gonna do after this. So until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no way. On the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no way. On the track when we...
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.